Welcome everyone to the Orthodox Christian Podcast, and we had a question come in on the form that I wanted to address. But before that, just a disclaimer that I'm not a priest in the Orthodox Church, and I always recommend getting to know one of the priests in your local area, because the Orthodox Church is not something that's just on the internet. In fact, it is primarily in person, so it's always recommended that you get to know the actual community that's closest to you, if at all possible. But I love to answer questions and be of any help that I might be. So happy to answer any questions that you may have. So, but just remember that this is just my opinion. It's not the official stance of the Orthodox Church. So this question comes from Stephen, and he writes, "First, I offer my sincerest thanks and love for the work you are doing. I'm a lifelong Anglican of 43 years, newly exploring the Orthodox faith. By the grace of God, I discovered your channel on Spotify. I absolutely love it and am moved by it." Well, thank you, Stephen. "Your work is a blessing and surely very pleasant to our Lord. My journey is less theological than it is practical. In my mind, the theology has already been established by men far better than me. It is not for me to decide. It is for me to follow. I must follow the church, but this introduces the difficulty. Where is the church? Expanding on that, it seems clear to me that the answer is in one of two places, Orthodoxy or Rome. The whole answer then lands on the question of the Pope. Is he the head of the church or is he not? If yes, then Rome. If no, then Orthodox. I'd love an episode discussing the proper place of the Pope in the church. Love and respect in Christ, Stephen." Well, thank you very much for the kind words, Stephen. It's really encouraging to know that this podcast is benefiting people like yourself, because that is the entire aim of it, and to connect people with the Orthodox Church. So thank you for your kind words. And then regarding your question, there's two things that come to mind for me. So first, to address it, you ask about the role of the Pope in the church, and this is like a really big topic. So I'm just going to give sort of the general outline of it as I understand it. But in ancient Christianity, unity developed over time. And so initially there is Christ and his disciples who become the apostles and are sent out, but then Christianity spreads in very organic ways, and it sort of rises up and has to figure out how to cooperate with each other, in the sense that there's these different major areas that form and have significance, and these become like the five patriarchates eventually, but there isn't a really central location initially. I mean, you can trace it back to Christ and to his apostles, but the apostles found different churches, and those different churches grow in prominence over time, and then those different churches have to figure out how to cooperate, and this is part of what the councils were doing in ancient Christianity. So you do have other places that are established by Saint Peter, like the church in Antioch. So that's like traditionally founded by him, but then you have other apostles going out founding other places. Like it's said that Saint Mark founds Alexandria, and I think James, the brother of Christ, brother in quotations, founds the one in Jerusalem, and Rome is associated with Peter, and Constantinople sort of comes in later. And in any case, all of these are like they have important lineages. And so I don't think it's necessary to elevate Rome above the others. However, I should say that traditionally the Roman patriarch was seen as the first among equals, and he did have a significant role within early Christianity. And it is also true that if you read ancient Christianity, the Pope of Rome often, not always, but often in this ancient period, was more traditional and kind of held the line when some of the Eastern patriarchates went off in unusual directions. So it had that reputation of being a bulwark of the faith that wouldn't waver when heresies arose. So it really mattered that it was the first among equals, because it had a really strong grasp on the faith, you could put it that way. So that's significant. But then later on, the papacy, in the sense that the Pope becomes like the bishop among bishops, that he is elevated, is an invention. And that's not in itself a bad thing because the church has to develop certain kinds of governance. However, it wasn't accepted by the other areas of Christendom. And so it is innovative in that way. And it contributed to the division between the Western Church and the Eastern Church. And on its own, it was a mechanism for unity in the Western Church by centralizing authority in the figure of the Pope. But it wasn't something that was universal. And so I think that we do have to acknowledge in a realistic way that the governance of the church does develop and change, but that it ideally should be done in consultation with the other parts of Christianity. And so by, you don't want to, you know, I'm trying to avoid like broad brush strokes in this answer, because there is a lot about elements of Roman Catholicism that I think are very beautiful in the sense that like there is a strong connection with the sacraments. I love St. Thomas Aquinas's writings. Like I've read the Summa Theologica and I really appreciate a lot of what he has to say. He's often quoting from Dionysius the Areopagite, who's this really prominent Eastern church father, as well as quoting from St. Augustine, and does a brilliant job of summarizing theology, although he isn't an Orthodox saint. And so there's a lot of good things that you can find in a tradition as vast as Catholicism, and someone would be kind of silly to just do broad brush strokes and say, well, everything there is horrible. But the elevation of the Pope is something that's innovative, and it wasn't agreed to by the church as a whole. And so I think that if you're considering what church to be part of, just look into the history of the other patriarchates in Christianity and see how they are also founded by apostles. And St. Peter also established Antioch, and Antioch is Orthodox. So that's just some food for thought. And then when you're considering the church as well, I think there's sort of this thing that we're doing right now with considering it from a distance, as it were, or more theoretically and mentally. But I think really the most important thing is to just start going to a church locally, that if at all possible, if there's one in your area, like find a good Orthodox speaking church and check it out for 3 months and see how it goes, because it does take time to kind of get used to the liturgy, to understand a little bit of what's going on there, to see the cycle of feasts and fasts, and to just get used to the spiritual culture that is part of the Orthodox Church. So I didn't grow up in the Orthodox Church. I grew up in the Evangelical Church. And then when I was studying at seminary to become a Protestant pastor, I wanted to learn more about Orthodoxy. And so just your story kind of reminds me of my own, in the sense that I was like, well, what are these other branches or traditions of Christianity? What are they all about? So I started going to, with my wife, an Orthodox church initially, because I had heard about that. It sounded really interesting. And we really fell in love with it. We found that it checked all the boxes of what we were looking for. It was unusual. It was strange. We had to get used to a lot of things, but we wanted more meaningful words in the liturgy in terms of like the songs and what was said formally. And we found that. We found a connection with church history. We found a connection with the church calendar. We found a robust understanding of the Eucharist, that it actually is the body and blood of Christ, that the world has the presence of God that is filling it. And yet God is completely different than the world and not the exact same, because God is the one that necessarily exists, or the existing one, as we say about Christ in the Divine Liturgy of St. John Chrysostom. So like there's just so much richness there. But I wanted to be comprehensive as much as possible. And so we also checked out some mainline Protestant churches, like Anglicanism in particular, and found that, you know, and you're not really addressing Anglicanism here, but we found that you could have everything you wanted, but it was optional, because Anglicanism is such a broad tent. They have people that are like, yay, icons, we love those. And you've also got people that are thinking that icons are idols. I believe that J.I. Packer did write in that vein, at least at one point. And so it seemed strange, especially as I was considering the possibility of being like an ordained minister. How would you pastor people if you had certain people that thought these things were idolatrous and others that wanted to venerate them? I don't know how that works, but it also is the same with like the Eucharist, where you've got people that believe that it is the body and blood of Christ. You've got other people that think it is just a outward sign of an inward reality, and it's nothing significant in itself, really. So that was kind of a no-go for us. And then we did also go to a Catholic parish a couple times and checked it out. And the Catholic liturgy at this point in history, unless it's like a traditional Latin mass, and I should also say that there are Eastern Rite Catholic parishes that are very, very similar to Orthodox, but they're in communion with Rome. But in terms of like the general practice, it is the Western Rite sort of modern version post-Vatican II that you'll see in Catholic parishes, and it's extremely similar to what you'll find in an Anglican church or a Lutheran church. It's very, very similar. And so it's, I guess it depends on the celebrant, it depends on who's celebrating the liturgy, but we just didn't find it quite as reverent, and weren't as attracted to it, albeit at the time I was thinking about full-time ministry and I'm married, and so that basically disqualifies me from any ministry opportunities in the Catholic Church. So that was my own bias in going in that direction and exploring it. But I think I mention all that just to say that it's really important to go to an actual parish and to experience an actual community, because the faith is embodied and it is something that is alive. And I am 100% confident that the Orthodox Church is a church in continuity with the apostles, not just in the sense that it has the proper lineage or pedigree, but it maintains the spirit and the faith of ancient Christianity, which in a world that is increasingly secular is probably the best bet of remaining Christian. And that's why I'm Orthodox, because in the Western culture, and I've said this before on the channel, but people's conception of God and the culture that we are immersed in general, is God and the world are drifting apart. This is not necessarily the case in reality, because we are only sustained in existence because God sustains us. And so, like, if God and the world were actually drifting apart, we would be corrupting and dying and disintegrating. But like, nevertheless, he maintains us in existence, but we don't see that. And there's such a culture of like stripping Christianity down and trying to water it down. And I think that Orthodoxy really retains its connection with God, with actual practices in terms of you have to fast. Like, to be an Orthodox Christian, unless you're like a pregnant mother or breastfeeding or have some sort of other illness, and there's an exception that a priest has made for you, which, you know, these things happen and it's important that those happen. But in general, you fast on Wednesdays, you fast on Fridays, you don't eat meat, you don't eat fish generally, you don't eat wine or consume wine or oil, and like it affects your life. And then there's big fasting periods like before Christmas or before Easter where you're just abstaining and like eating oatmeal for breakfast all the time, or maybe even for dinner. And this is important because these disciplines put the world in its proper place so that it doesn't continually expand and just become everything that we're looking at. It's easy to be consumed by consumerism in North America. And so something like fasting, it's rare to actually find it practiced in the church by lay people. And in Orthodoxy, it is at least the expectation that if you're an Orthodox Christian, you will be fasting, that you will be praying and attending liturgy, that you, I mean, this one should be more emphasized, but like tithing, that's important as well. But there's like a real emphasis on actual spiritual discipline in Orthodoxy that I really appreciate. And I really like Dr. Daniel Opperwall's opinion when I asked him about the church and what is the true church. And he said something along the lines of, I think he was quoting Callisto Swear, or Metropolitan Callisto Swear, that we know where the church is, we don't know where the church isn't. And so it's like we can trust that in Orthodoxy, it is the faith, that it is giving us tools that will lead to our salvation, that using the Jesus Prayer as a method of prayer, that putting ourselves in front of icons and bowing and fasting, et cetera, is going to save us. It's going to turn us into the kind of people that are receptive to God and can actually be united with divinity. And I buy that. I do believe that this is the case. And One thing that someone said to me when I was weighing these questions, he became my godfather. And I was really considering, like, okay, well, do I have to go with Orthodoxy? Could I just go with another stream of Christianity or another, like, tradition of Christianity that has a sense of sacramentality? He said, don't compromise on your salvation, which I thought was just really brilliant advice. And hear that for what it is, in the sense that, like, when Orthodox speak about salvation, it's a journey towards God. It's becoming who we are meant to be in Christ that involves our actual concrete actions in the world. And so it's very important how we embody our faith, because if we don't take the necessary steps now, like, we just won't change, and then we will be judged. And this is just the way the world works. If you think about it, in the sense of, like, if you have something imminent on the horizon, and if you don't take action to prepare yourself for this thing, like if you have to hire someone, or if you're going out to perform a job and you don't take the necessary steps beforehand and you sleep in on the day that it's supposed to happen, the world will judge you. Like, you will experience unnecessary pain because you weren't prepared. And so I feel like our salvation is the same thing. It's a journey towards God. We have to prepare ourselves. We have to cooperate with God's grace. And Orthodoxy gives us the tools. It gives us the way. And I'm really content and happy with my place in Orthodoxy. So all that to say, overall, if I'm summarizing, the Pope is an important figure within the church. Historically, he is the first among equals and has a significant role, and was often the more conservative or traditional voice within the midst of conflicts. However, the papacy, in terms of the Pope being a bishop among a bishop over top of bishops in his own unique rank, and not only being the first among equals, but actually the first and superior to other bishops, this is an invention. And that doesn't mean it's automatically wrong, but the church did not accept it as a whole, and therefore I don't think it was a helpful move ultimately. And then when you're considering what tradition to be part of, I think it's really important to yes, engage with some of these mental questions and wrestlings, but then go and experience a local parish and see what it's like, and just try to embody that way of life for like 3 months, and then assess and say, is this what I want to be part of? I don't know if you've got kids or a wife or whatever, but is this something that you feel confident raising your children in, and trust that this is a trajectory that will see them being Christian in the future? Not that you can guarantee that, they have free will, they can choose what they will want, but I think that these are important questions. And if you did that, like 3 months in Orthodoxy, make an assessment. If you found something that's really good, I would just latch onto it. But you could also, to be like super objective, do 3 months there, do 3 months in a Catholic church or vice versa, and then just stand back and try to assess and be like, okay, which one do I want to be part of? And if you have further questions about this, I would love to answer them. And thank you again so much for your kind words and your support. It means a lot. Take care.